This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been an exciting week. It is also episode 430. On our way to 2000. It's been a good week. It's just been an exciting week. So everything's going well at work. We're doing our first test of our first paperless form. That seems to be going fine. I had given all the participants a deadline of Friday to get their stuff in. So of course today, and I think late yesterday, we had a mad rush, because that's what we do as human beings. And it did all flesh out something that needed to be done, so I'm working on that little piece of it, and we'll get that added in pretty soon here. And then come Monday, we're actually going to try to start harvesting things. We look like we're in pretty good shape for that. There may be a few little things that need to be dressed up, but that's all fine. And I'm starting to spread out the knowledge of K2 to another programmer on the team, and he's doing fine. And so, you know, everything moves forward. It's a beautiful day today. It's a little warm, especially in the car, with my sadness of my air conditioning not even close to working. So it's a little sad, last weekend, as far as family things go, we got my mom moved into the lodge, long-term care there. She's doing okay. She's got a rasp and some pneumonia and some congestive heart failure, and, you know, she's not really eating that much, but they are keeping her comfortable and doing what they can do, and she is back on hospice now, and we are just going to take this one step at a time and let nature take its course, and we will see where we end up. I think we know where we're going to end up. We just don't know how long it will be before we get there. So we will just putter forward. Everybody has been very, very kind to Mom. Once they were informed that she had a broken hip, that first night there, they didn't know exactly yet, so there was a little rougher handling than need to be, but after that, it was like, oh, sorry, and then we've been good. So anyways, that's fine. My dad's been doing okay with all of this. He has apparently come down with a head cold from somewhere at this point, so he's pretty miserable, but he's trying to get better as well. I just dropped off some Claritin for him under the advice of the hospice nurse who came by to visit him. So, one step at a time. Things are going to get exciting for me tomorrow. I'm having my first colonoscopy tomorrow, and I'm doing it without anesthesia because that's the way they do it in Europe. But I actually have a couple of friends who've done it without anesthesia, and they said, you know, it's not that bad. You just kind of lay on your side and watch the TV of the playing the movie about the big cave. And I think I'd like to be awake for it. If you're awake for it, they do the procedure, you get up, you go home. You know, if you're not, if you do the anesthesia, you're there for hours. So I've got plenty of stuff to do tomorrow. It's at 1:30. I would just as soon go in, get it done, go home. My beloved wife feels like she needs to go with me just in case, so that's fine. She's coming. And I decided at the same time that since I knew I had to start a liquid diet this morning, Thursday, and that I would be flushing everything out tonight, Thursday night, and then I wouldn't be able to eat anything until after the colonoscopy on Friday. I mean, that's already 36 hours. I thought, you know, you're going to be doing a 3-day fast here in a couple of days. Why not just move it forward and do it now? So I quit eating Tuesday evening, did my normal fast yesterday, and then just kind of kept trailing it into this morning. I'm doing okay. Was able to get some good writing done last night. Hopefully I'm going to get some more good writing done tonight. Back and forth of running to the bathroom as I clean myself out so I can have a good colonoscopy. I've got the stuff at home. I've shaken it up. I'm supposed to be home at 6 o'clock to start drinking that stuff down. Right now it is 5:51 because I had to go get my dad some Claritin, so I may be a little late, but that's okay. We're going to get this done. So, anyways, all is well on all those counts. The grandkids are well. The kids are well. My wife is well. All is well. Well. It's all well. Still getting together with friends. Had breakfast with a buddy last Friday. Supposed to be... had another buddy who wrote me, actually just texted me right now and asked if we wanted to get together, and I told him I'm prepping for a colonoscopy. I said, I will touch base with you over the weekend. So, get that out of the way. Anyway, so that's all good. I've got a topic that sooner or later everybody has to talk about today, and this probably will be a little shorter because as soon as I get home, I got to go in and take the pill that will supposedly settle my stomach so that while I'm taking the colonoscopy stuff, that it will be less nauseating. So we'll see. Anyways, I came across this topic this week. And it was broached by a guy that I thought, well, you sound fairly sane. And so I just thought, you know, why not? Let's talk about this. The name of his talk was Why I Believe in UFOs and You Should Too. His name is Ben Mezrich. Ben Mezrich. Now then, you know, he got up to just start his little talk and introduced himself as an author, and I thought, oh, okay. He said he's here to talk about UFOs, how he got into UFOs. He said, my parents are upset that whenever I talk about UFOs, but he just keeps doing it. And he kind of gave a little bit of his backstory, and that, you know, the guy has been successful, yada yada. I mean, he was... he'd always wanted to be a writer, but not nonfiction. He wanted to write, like, TV things. He loved Saved by the Bell and Three's Company. And so he was in Boston in his apartment. He wanted to be a writer. He decided he was going to try. He said he wrote 9 novels in a given year, which that's... I don't know how long those novels are, but that's an accomplishment. 9 novels in 1 year. That's plowing. He said he wouldn't recommend that to anybody. He said he was rejected by everyone in publishing. I've gotten some rejections, but not as many as him. He said he got 190 rejection slips, and that he taped them all to his wall. And he said he looked like a serial killer in his apartment. He said, I was even rejected by a janitor at a publishing house. He said, I wrote a manuscript, sent it to an editor who was no longer there. They threw it into trash. The janitor took it out of the trash, apparently read it, and then rejected me. But he did go on. He was in a bar and he started talking to some guys that seemed to have a lot of money. He went back to one of the guys' house. There was just stacks of money everywhere. And the guy asked him, he said, so are you some kind of drug dealer? And turns out, no, this guy was one of the heads of the MIT blackjack team that was famous a couple of years ago. And so he went back home. Learned how to play blackjack from this guy, went to Vegas, was on there for a while. They eventually, he wrote a book about it, and they made a movie about it, and Then he had another one, somebody who told him, my best friend founded Facebook and no one's ever heard of him. And turns out it was Eduardo Saverin. And so he wrote a book about that. That became The Social Network. I mean, so this is a guy who has enjoyed some successes in his life. This isn't just a nut. It's warm in the car. I'm turning the air up a little bit. And there is more noise because they did a chip and seal on all these roads. So there's more noise going all the way home. Anyways, so then he started talking about the fact that in Massachusetts, cattle mutilation is not that big of a deal. But he met a guy named Chuck Zukowski. And Chuck Zukowski was a deputy, and he was investigating cattle mutilation. He said, we don't know much about it here. He said, but in the West, this is an enormous problem. Now, I don't know how much of this is true. I don't know how much of it is slanted. I have no idea. I'm just saying what this guy said, which was intriguing, but I didn't necessarily decide that I need to get on some kind of a campaign. I just thought, yeah, this is pretty intriguing. He said, out in the West, there are enormous problems. He said, over 10,000 cows and horses have been found lying on their side, lying on their left side, missing organs. All of the cuts are surgical and circular, and the bodies are completely drained of blood. He said, this has been going on since the 60s. He said, it was such a huge phenomenon that in the 70s, three state governors got together and petitioned the Attorney General of the United States and demanded an explanation, an investigation. The FBI investigated, involving 100 agents, 10 years, they found nothing. No one's been arrested, not a single fingerprint, not a single footprint. These cows are just found lying there, missing all their organs. It's really weird. He said this sheriff's deputy, Chuck, was investigating all that, and he starts to think UFOs. And immediately, he gets fired from the sheriff's department. Said, this is normally what happens when you say UFOs. So, he decides to become a UFO hunter. Okay, this is Chuck. This is not the author. This is Chuck. He got an RV, put his family in it, started going up and down the Midwest looking for UFOs. His family didn't believe. His wife was a total skeptic. He said, I interviewed her because the guy was going to write a book. I interviewed her and I said, how do you put up with this? And she said, well, could be worse. He's not having affairs. He's just in the mountains looking for aliens. So he starts to make a weird discovery. Turns out that the majority of UFO sightings occur along the 37th parallel of the United States. I don't know if this is true or not. It was just what the guy said, and he seemed like a fairly level-headed guy. It also turns out that most cattle mutilations are along the 37th parallel. It also turns out that most all of America's underground military bases are also along the 37th parallel of the United States. There could be a perfectly good reason for all of that. I don't know. But according to him, the Pentagon, Cheyenne Mountain, Fort Knox, all the way over to Area 51. Ta-da. He says, so Chuck is investigating UFO. Starts to have weird run-ins. Said, you'd think he'd be having run-ins with the government, because the government used to investigate UFOs. They don't anymore, apparently. There was a thing called Project Blue Book. They came out, I think Project Blue Book came out and said they couldn't find any of that. He said, after that, there were two other secret projects. He said, but the government no longer investigates UFOs. So it turns out Chuck was having run-ins with a private corporation. The private corporation is run by a billionaire named Robert Bigelow. Now, I did look this up, and in fact, Robert Bigelow is on record as saying he absolutely believes in UFOs. Said Robert Bigelow made his money from Budget Suites of America, and then he put most of his fortune into something called Bigelow Aerospace. So they do all kinds of stuff. They have pieces on the International Space Station, blah, 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 blah. But he also has, according to this guy, for the last 20 years, funded investigations of UFOs. He said they're doing this in conjunction with certain governmental organizations. He said, if you, now, I don't know if this is true, but this is interesting. if you get a copy of an FAA manual that all of our civilian pilots use, and you look through it, deep into the writing, you find what a pilot is supposed to do if they see something in the air. They don't report it to the FAA, because they don't report it to their airline, because that would get them fired. They report it to Bigelow. Bigelow gets all this information. Okay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So then he started talking about Roswell, of course. And he started talking about how back with Roswell, and I may have to pause this just for a moment. As part of this whole excitement tonight, they had me take 4 Dokalaxes at noon. You know what? It feels like they're kicking in. So I may pause this for a moment. I will be back, but I may just need to take a pause. I'm coming back. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. And that was a good call. Okay, so I'm back. Anyways, so he started talking about Roswell. Yeah. So, 4 Dokalaxes. I usually don't have that much trouble anyways. Things are going to accelerate tonight. This is going to be fabulous, I'm sure. So he starts talking about Roswell and how that they're tracking this thing, and all of a sudden it goes down, and he said it. I'm getting my mail. One moment. He said, tracking something through the storm in the middle of the night in July, whatever the thing was, hit by lightning, crashed on a ranch in Roswell. Spreads metallic debris 300 yards all over this ranch. The metallic debris was covered in weird hieroglyphics. It was made of a material that people couldn't identify. Rancher sees all this stuff. He calls up the sheriff. Sheriff calls the Air Force. He sends out a team. Team gathers up the debris, puts out a press release. The press release says, from the Air Force says, we now have in possession, our possession, a flying saucer. 2 hours later, they rescind that press release. They gather up all the material. They go inch by inch, gather it all up. They put it on a plane. First, they land in Dallas, where they stage a photo with a radar operator sitting amongst the debris of a broken weather balloon. Everyone who was involved in that photograph has since come forward and said it was a fake. I love this stuff. One moment, backing into my garage. Sorry, didn't mean to thump the recorder there. So everyone says it's fake. He says the person who took the photograph, the person in the photograph, and the person who ordered it. They all say it was fake. Anyways, the debris was carted away to Area 51, where it is to this day. He said, for whatever reason, the Air Force will not release the files on this crash. This is where it starts getting interesting for me. Hillary Clinton a few months ago was on Jimmy Kimmel, and I looked it up, and she said if she were elected president, one of the first things she would do is get the Air Force to release the UFO files. Sadly, this was not to be. I don't know if she's trying to go for the UFO vote with that. Anyways, he said, every president we've had, with the possible exception of Obama, has believed in UFOs. Every president when? That might have not have been. I thought he said every recent president or something like that. Because this is a transcript off of YouTube, and sometimes it's not right. Has believed in UFOs, tried to get the files released. Jimmy Carter believed, Ronald Reagan believed, Bill Clinton tried twice to get the files released and couldn't. Hillary wanted to do it. We don't know whether Trump will or not. So anyways, the files do exist. You know, the question is, why aren't they being released, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyways, this guy thinks that people are getting more and more used to the idea that there may be aliens, you know, with every year that goes by, and so that finally, you know, the government or somebody will eventually say, yeah, okay, whatever, there are aliens. Okay, so he also mentioned that the Catholic Church has come forward
and said that even if there are aliens, it's not going to change Catholic doctrine.
Okay. So, gotta wrap this up. This is just fascinating to me. What do I believe? I have no idea.
Would it shake my faith to the core if we discovered that there were aliens? No. No. No.
I am not of the opinion that I should... I'm going to move this because I'm not staring at it and it's making me weird. Okay, there we go. I am not of the opinion that I should be telling God how he should run his business. Just seems to me that saying, well, we have to be the only ones, it's a bit egotistical. And if it's egotistical, then that's probably flesh. Then that's probably not smart. It's just like in the old days when the church... the old Middle Ages, when the church had to insist that the earth was the center of the universe. And that's very egotistical. Jesus wants to have other families around. Hey, that's no problem with me. He's been so good to me. He's been so kind to me. He can do whatever he wants. If the aliens are actually demons and they're doing this stuff just to cause turmoil, well, that's, you know... he who lives in me is greater than he that is in the world. And honestly, you know, cattle mutilations. What would be the point of cattle mutilations? I have a hard time believing there's some kind of force for good that is doing that. But that does not believe, that does not mean that I have to believe it's some kind of a supernatural thing. Who knows? Who knows what's going on in these things? But I do know that God is good, God is kind, God is generous. God has been wondrous to me, that we commune every day, that all is well, that even in the midst of parents heading towards their final rewards, leaving this earth, step at a time, even amidst all of the deadlines and trying to make this all work amidst all the trying to get book 6 finished, all that. He is good. Step at a time. Everything's fine. We're moving forward. God is good. And as I've said over and over and over in the past, I derive so much benefit from my belief system that honestly, it doesn't really matter if I'm wrong, because it has led me to a life of kindness and generosity and grace, and that pays so many dividends that I really wouldn't have it any other way. And so if I lay me down to sleep and die before I wake, that's okay too. And if I just go into nothingness, that's okay too. Because right here, right now, I have gained a tremendous benefit from knowing him and from listening for him and from following that still whisper, those still whispers within my spirit. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.